Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P on 97.3 ESPN.
Just not enough time to do it all, but wow, we are trying. Hey, you're inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P, airing the weekend of November 29th and 30th. Full disclosure, we're in the studio very early in the week because of the holiday weekend, and what a kickoff to the season. But the Thanksgiving weekend, it is all systems go. Stripers, tog, trout, also on a freshwater front, the largemouth bass in that pattern. Things are happening. Just a reminder now, pheasant stocking for the 29th. They stocked the 28th for the 29th. Pheasant stocking and quail stocking will not resume until the 15th of December for the 16th. All the information on the birds is on page 55 in the digest. Permit muzzleloader buck permits must be purchased no later than December 1st at 11:59 p.m. When it's that late, naturally, after business hours, go to njfishandwildlife.com, go to the permit link, and go from there. For permit shotgun season, it's going to be December 17th. And do not forget that free hunting and trapping pass at Wharton State Forest. You can get it at the Batstow office, which is open 7 days a week, except Thanksgiving Day, naturally. 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., 31 Batstow Road, Hamilton, New Jersey, 609-561-0024. We have a very jammed show, man. Coming up, we're talking prospectus for six-day firearm deer. This prospectus for the segment B of the bear season, trolling for stripers with Captain Bob Wood. Cool guy, very knowledgeable. And also, hey, believe it or not, there was a winter trout fishing seminar put on by Fish and Wildlife's R3 program, and it's going to be in Ocean County. Finally, the southern, central, and southern tier counties are getting their trout love on. So grab that cup, grab that Red Bull. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio. What a glorious time of the year.
It's Philadelphia Flyers hockey tonight on 97.3 ESPN and the 97.3 ESPN free mobile app. Listen as Tim Saunders and Todd Fedoric bring you all the exciting play-by-play action.
They score! Connect the other one-timer, and DK makes no mistake, the power play goal.
It's Flyers Devil tonight. Coverage begins at 7 p.m. It's Flyers hockey all season long on South Jersey's radio home for Philadelphia Flyers hockey. 97.3 ESPN. Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P on 97.3 ESPN.
Coming up very soon, let's see, we're looking at December 8th through 13th. The, what I used to call a traditional firearm buck week, but you can use archery and, you know, muzzleloaders and a whole bit. Deer season, just steeped in tradition, especially here in the southern tier counties. Not so much up in the north anymore. And I remember 100,000 years ago when I was a youngster, got my first license. You drive along, for example, I'll name an area right off the top of my head, between High Point State Park and Stokes on the Deckard and Pike. Now, you'd get there an hour early, opening day, and there would be cars and trucks. There were no minivans back then. Yes, that's how long ago I'm talking, or SUVs, crossovers, whatever. A mile and a half long. And guys would get deer, but literally the Orange Army. That's now scattered with all the different seasons. But down here in the South, with the clubs especially, I've been a very fortunate to participate in a few. It's really still so embedded in the fabric, woven in there. Very important week. Well, we're going to hear from Fish and Wildlife Supervising Biologist Jody Powers. He's also head of the Deer Project Leader. Hear how the autumn bow season went. Permit bow season is going on. And the prospectus for this glorious, glorious week in December. Hi, Jody. I get a little verbose when I talk about deer, man. How's it going?
I'm good. How are you, Tom?
I am so ready. I am so ready, rocking and whatever. I just, this time of year, especially November into December, with the deer hunting. Now, I'm 138 years old, going to be 139 next September. We know that. But I never saw rutting active with deer so, maybe once or two, so reckless, as in literally passing a rake and a half distance away from me while I'm doing leaves and stuff on a trail of a doe numerous times. I mean, I said, boy, to be 16 again, my God. And,
yeah.
And it's just been, and I'm seeing deer everywhere, especially, Joe, we just saw a small six rack, not big rack, but a big body deer, public land down here, yep, in the South. So there are plenty of deer, even as good as the harvest is during the fall bow and permit bow, there are still plenty of antlers around for that buck week.
Yep, definitely. That's the plan.
Yeah, fall bow. How did the numbers pan out compared to last year?
Yep. So these are preliminary numbers, so we haven't had a chance to, you know, go through them yet. It's raw data still. But so far, it looks like it was up 10% from last year.
Whoa.
Yep. Yeah.
Any noticeable jumps, any particular DMZs?
Yeah, we didn't look at it that closely yet. And actually, we were a little surprised by that number as well because of the acorn harvest. And sometimes when there's a big acorn production year, the harvest dips a little bit because they don't come into bait so much.
Right.
But yeah, the preliminary numbers are up 10%.
This is fantastic. And you ain't lying about the acorns. I told you a little bit off the air. Listen, invest, I'll tell you, I'm seeing $15 a bag for corn. Yo!
Yeah.
Yep. Listen to Uncle Tom P. Actually, he said Grandpa Tom P. Buy online, I don't know where you get it. I did an acorn picker-upper. You got a lot of acorns around, roll them up, put them back, and the deer come in like there is no tomorrow. It's like putting me in a pizzeria with a credit card and an unlimited menu. Jody, now I heard from someone who, and we hunt out that area, my lovely Dee Marie, it's a fave area out in the Mill May area. You know what I'm talking about? And that we're in, was it 45 and 46 last year? They listen, because of the EHD, they shut down the permit seasons.
Yep.
And
and
the guy was basically, said, he said, there's plenty of deer in my, again, they're pockets. My area, plenty of deer. Well, he was a little mea culpa, and in a good way, when he said, I think they did the right thing because that really lets some of these bucks grow. And Jody, on the camera, there are some eye-popping deer out there now where, whoa, so maybe that little hiatus it definitely helped insofar as antler size.
Yep, definitely. The population is responding positively to that closure. So it was a good choice that we and the council made. Yep.
Okay, not to put you on the spot, but is how does this get rescinded or will it be continued? When is the vote on that or discussion on that?
Yep, so it'll be after the season's over. So for the past 2 years, we looked at the data and we ran spotlight counts to do a population estimate, a density estimate.
Mm-hmm.
We saw some slight improvement last year over the first year of the closure. So once the season's over, we'll look at all that data again. It'll get presented to council and then they can make the decision on if they want to continue or, you know, open it back up.
Okay. Again, you hear the same thing. Once it's gone, you never get it back. But I don't think that'll be the case this year because these deer, Joe, they're beautiful, they're numerous, and they are healthy. And I'm seeing, I'm not a rack guy. I see a deer in my station. I see chili, I see cutlets, you know, that type thing. My lovely Dee Marie, she's in a rack phase, but that area really, really rebounded. And it was good to see. Jody, are there any flashpoint areas where we didn't have the AHD outbreak, thank God, this year? Or where you notice a decline in the harvest at all, like due to development or anything like that happening?
I'm sorry. I think you cut out. Sorry. I didn't hear all that whole question.
Yeah. Are there any areas, any flashpoints that you've seen where the harvest going into perm bow, where the harvest declined, be it because of habitat loss or lack of participation, anything like that? Or is it just that 10% increase?
Yeah, we haven't seen it yet. We haven't really looked at zone by zone basis yet. We don't like to do that until we get some more of the data in.
Mm-hmm.
But we haven't looked at it, but we haven't heard of anything. So far, it's still just 45 and 46.
Oh, fantastic.
And then even with the permit bow, when we looked at the first couple weeks of permit bow, that was up 11%. But that could probably change as the season continues. Yeah, so overall, we're up 10.5% so far. So we'll see what happens as the season continues.
I rate that a win-win across the board. And yeah, Jody, I go to some of these meetings, and, you know, you talk, you banner the sports shops and whatever. That, again, how explaining this, where guys say, you know, they're killing too many, like what happened in Pennsylvania here a little time, killing too many does, you knock down a doe, you're removing three deer out of the population. Well, maybe that's what you want to do, keeping the population. Is there an answer to that? That's the fisher-cut bait type of question.
Yeah, well, you know, it's hard to compare Jersey to Pennsylvania, right? Mm-hmm. So it's the most densely human populated state.
And it seems that everybody's angry.
Yes, that's true. But, you know, so far, you know, it seems that, you know, there's still just way too many deer out there. And, you know, access, as you know, is always the key to any sort of management program. So. Mm-hmm. You know, there's still a huge portion of the state that's not hunted. And, you know, that seems to be feeding into these areas where we can get to. But, you know, the chance of us overshooting in the majority of the state is it's not going to happen.
Okay, Jody. Okay, Jody, before I get into one final topic here, on the acorn drop itself, it seems it's like ongoing. I mean, there's still is it what you call in a biological term like a staggered drop, because it seems to be acorns everywhere.
Yeah, that is what we saw. It seemed like the reds, the whites, the chestnuts, the pin oaks, they were all dropping at different times this fall. So the deer have been able to eat all those acorns for almost the whole fall bow season. So they're really fat. They're really happy. They're getting big. So hopefully, you know, 6 days is going to be a really good week.
Okay, Jody, two things. This one, well, actually, the last thing I want to touch on, just to necessary to you know, bring up the subject. Naturally, EHD. I didn't hear of any outbreak. And always, as always, that specter, because you hear it in Pennsylvania, it's getting closer. It's as close as we hopefully it doesn't get any closer. Chronic wasting disease. Michigan just had an outbreak. There's another outbreak in Missouri. They're finding. Are we safe and not bringing in deer from out of state? That seems to be working, correct?
Yes. So EHD, real quick, we didn't have any confirmed cases. We really had very few reports of sick deer that even were suspected to be EHD. We tested a few. They were all negative. CWD, yep, we continue to do our surveillance program. We're almost up to 1,000 deer already that we pulled the lymph nodes out of to be tested. Mm-hmm. And, you know, knock on wood, we don't have it yet. So, you know, all of these precautions are, you know, I'm not going to say preventing, but they're definitely helping to delay New Jersey getting CWD. So the key, yeah, is definitely do not bring in any full deer from any other state.
Good job, Elijah. Now I have to ask you.
And then I'm just going to say, Judge.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself. Go ahead.
And also the ban on the lures, the natural scents. You can't be in possession, sell, use any of that stuff. So,
well, Jody, the deer said 1,000 tested. Are they from every county? How do you pick which deer to test?
Yep. So we have a couple butchers throughout the state that are saving deer heads for us. So we collect, mm-hmm. you know, every couple days, and we'll pull in lymph nodes. We're focusing on, you know, the surrounding borders with other states. So we're doing a lot of focus on the Pennsylvania border because mm-hmm. that's typically where it's going to come from. And then up in Oak Ridge, we have a butcher that's getting some from New York but close to the New York border.
Okay.
So that's pretty much how we're focusing it right now.
Okay. Joining us on the line is Jody Powers, supervising biologist, DEP Fish and Wildlife. She's also the Deer Project Leader. And as she said, it looks great for 6-day firearm season going to come. That's going to run from December 8th through the 13th. Yahoo and South Jersey, all your deer clubs, man. Keep it alive. Keep it going. Jody, you take care. Have a great, great, great Thanksgiving weekend.
You too, Tom. Thank you.
See you later. Jody Powers, so cool. I met her at a Fish and Wildlife meeting last March. Just brilliant and very personal, very approachable. Just a brilliant, brilliant person. Grab that cup. Grab that Red Bull. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
Football Sunday on ESPN Radio. It's a critical showdown in the AFC South.
First and goal from the 8. Stroud throws in. So great hands. Caught. Touchdown.
Will C.J. Stroud return? Or will Davis Mills lead the Houston Texans into Indianapolis against Daniel Jones in a first-place Colts?
Jones throwing. Caught by Gowns at the 1. And in for the touchdown.
It's NFL Sunday on 97.3 ESPN. Coverage begins at noon. Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. on 97.3 ESPN.
Here we go. Look out below. Back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Thanksgiving weekend, November 29th and 3rd. Again, mentioned the striper bite. The target shoot and the striper bite is hot. Roll with the troll, as the saying goes, because the troll is out there. It's not a matter of just dropping something down. Man, we're talking umbrellas. We're talking stretches, mojos, bunker spoons. What do you have? Very special guest. Finally tackled him. How to tackle this guy. Captain Robert Wood. My Jezebel is his boat. He is the fleet captain, Forked River Tuna Club, ace on the troll, catching bass. It is an art form. I'm telling you, people, it is an art form to doing it right and doing it properly and doing it ethically, because, you know, have etiquette in there, because it can get crazy. Captain Bob, sorry, man. I get too fired up with this. How you doing, man?
Oh, top of the morning to you, Tom. How are you, sir?
Lock, cocked, and ready to rock. Hey, how are the boys?
Oh, they're doing well, sir. They're doing well. They're on the bus or at school already, so they're doing good. But they've been out on the big old briny Atlantic, and they've been catching up them stripers, my man.
Okay, Robert. Listeners, full disclosure: we are recording this earlier in the week. Okay, so Robert, Captain, Commodore, Admiral, when it comes to the troll, again, you said that it was umbrellas. Sometimes it's mojos. Sometimes it's the spoons, and you have a stretch out there in the back. Most effective trolling technique and the willingness to change right now in this critical striper period, this is prime time.
Yes, sir. You're 100% correct. I appreciate all the accolades. I'm only the fleet captain of the Fork River Tuna Club. Hats off to them up there that do great service to everything is for the fishing community. And I'm just a skipper of my own personal vessel, but I do bring some friends out, this, that, and the other. We have been, of course, out there. Everybody's trying to jig, and everybody wants to do this and catch them on the jig, catch them on a flutter spoon. I'm not saying that that's not a bad way to do things.
Mm-hmm.
But when that does not turn on, or that is not an option because there's the 900,000 other boats out there trying to do the same exact thing,
mm-hmm.
you have to go and you got to change it up. So what has been working for myself and for other people, of course, in this community, this good old striper community that we live in, we are out there swapping the gear up, going on the troll. And what has worked one day, 2 days later, might be something completely different. Everything from mojos. Okay, mojos last week and spoons were lights out. Chartreuse was on the loose. It was awesome. Then of course you change up a different day. White is the only thing they'll bite. So it's like, all right. So that was yesterday, and we had to swap it up from running mojos. Okay, and also our bunker spoons. We're like, okay. But I was running right through. You could see, everybody has good electronics nowadays for the most part. And I'm running Simrad NSS Evo 3 gear, and I'm just looking at these stripers on the bottom, looking at the bait. And they wouldn't come up for anything. Of course, I would go with my standard, drop the gears down. Okay, let everything flutter down, and then put it back in gear, or speed the troll up. Sometimes nothing was biting, so I was like, "All right, let's go over to umbrellas." So we went over to, of course, some umbrellas, and that turned them on yesterday. But it was only on white. Chartreuse wouldn't catch a thing, and that's what it was. And but stretch 25s, I will say, you run a stretch 25 down the middle of your spread, that nice big rattle on there. That'll get their attention sometimes. It really will.
Now, Captain, on the umbrellas, you're talking basically, I don't know, there's myriad brands out there, but are you talking for lack, just for simplicity, like Niners, for example?
Absolutely. I swear by Niners. I think that they're a great product. We're out there, of course, make sure you throw your drail weight on the front of them to get them down. And also, but depending on what I'm using, I use a wire line with, of course, my bunker spoons, but if it's convenient, sometimes the wire line will also get the umbrella depending on the setup,
mm-hmm.
and what I want to clear the deck with. And that for all intents and purposes yesterday, that was the lights out show. Wire line, 4 to 6 ounce drail to get it down, and about 45 to 55 feet of water. And it was on. The party was on. So.
Captain Robert Wood of the Jezebel, I have to, I've noticed this, hours, where I put some hours during the week at a shop. It's almost like a renaissance with wire line. It seemed to me that, and I visit shops, Captain, from Bayonne, Jersey City, down to Cape. I'm all over the place. That's my lifestyle. That's what I do. And it seems braid, wire line, that's dinosaur. I'm seeing more and more guys going to the wire line or never left it. Have you noticed that?
I love braid for certain things. Okay, braid is a great product. All right, it's awesome. You're right there. You're in touch with the fish. Okay, directly. The only problem is that I love the weight of wire. Okay, mm-hmm. You get that 10 feet for every 100 100 feet of drop. It presents the bait better in the water. In my personal opinion, I outfish people with wire, period, the end. I know it's a pain to use.
It's
very difficult. There's a lot of people that don't like to even touch a pole with braid on it, with wire on it. But it's been the lights out all day long thing that's been catching for me.
Hey, Ted, Captain, let me tell you something. When a guy could have said, "No, man, I'm leaving that to the other guy, so either put wire on or take it off." No way, I don't touch that, man. Okay, going to the Niners now. I was at a shop a little farther up the coast, And it was, again, the guy said, Tom Peters, San Diego's out there. It was either natural eel or the black eel on the Niners. No shads. No shad, the chartreuse, the I forget what they call it, satin or something like that, or silk. No silk, no black back, no pearl. It was the eel. When do you decide, hey, man, these shads aren't working, the color's not working. Do you make a drop change to for example, their eel setup?
Absolutely. For instance, if the bite's in close with a west wind, I will tend to run, if I'm running, Niners, any type of umbrella setup to where I'm running eels, I'll run them closer to the coast with a west wind.
Mm-hmm.
If you have to be outside the fleet, of course, if you don't want to be stacked up on the beach and, getting anybody that's surf casting thrown a plug in your boat.
or a big-ass Hopkins or Ava 67. Hey.
100%, sir, 100%. So if you don't want to play that game, that's when I'll go over to the shads. And then what it comes down to is I will wind up, if I'm further offshore, okay, of course, within the three-mile line at all times. But what you want to do is you want to, I'll find bait. And, of course, I hate to use the term, match the hatch, but it's what mm-hmm. it is. If they're feeding on bunker, okay, you can get down some shads, if that's working, stick with it. If you're on eels, okay, and you're next to the, if you're working your umbrella, eel setup, and you're running next to the coast, right against the beach, mm-hmm. and that's not working, swap it up. Go to some shads. Change the color. You have to be able to, don't just sit there and run through fish all day long, and not do anything. I was on fire with chartreuse for the last three trips. Yesterday, it was white was the only thing that they wanted. They only wanted shad. They didn't want eels. That's what was catching.
Versatility is the key, then, Cab. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely, you got it. You got to have a lot. You got to have a lot of tools in your tool belt. Okay, you have to know how to use them as well. Okay, just don't be swinging that hammer wildly. You got to get out there and do it right.
I think you said that for my benefit. Okay, Captain Robert Wood, my Jezebel. Well, we're up against a hard break here, Captain. Thanks for this great information on the trolling end. Versatility is the key. Listen, if you miss it, go to the podcast. It'll be on Spotify, YouTube, Apple, and 97.3. Cap, I hear more and more about the Forked River Tuna Club. We have about a minute and a half left. Go into this organization, please.
It's a great organization. Bay Ave in Forked River. I'm assuming it's Bay Ave. In Forked River, it's a great club. If you want to become a member, just find us online, okay, Forked River Tuna Club, and get in touch with us. There's plenty of contact information that's, of course, on the internet about us. Ask a member, and then, of course, you can become a member. From there, it's a really great club, very good organization. It's a really good networking tool.
There you go.
Get out there, get people fishing. And also, if you don't necessarily have a boat, there's other people in the club that have a boat, and they're always willing to share some fuel costs and go out there and show you what they know.
Cap, one thing I mentioned is, again, I met a few, besides yourself, not many, like four or five, six, in my travels here and there. But it seems to be a lot of good camaraderie in this organization. Other organizations, I'm not disparaging anyone here, but the Tuna Club, the Forked River Tuna in particular, willing to help each other. And again, you have your boat's down, you don't have a boat, hop on board, man, share the expense, let's go fishing and have a good time.
That's what it is. It's a great fraternal organization. They have a wonderful women's club as well. And it's all inclusive. Okay, family oriented. Of course, they have plenty of things, events that go all throughout the year.
Yeah.
It's really good. Everything from, of course, our tournaments to, breakfast with Santa. It's a good organization. I really would think that anybody that's in this sport and loves this lifestyle should definitely give it a look.
Guys, put it out here right now, people. We're up against a hard break really fast, 30 seconds, so the cap is not going to have time to reply. He is going to be on Rack and Fin, God spares, this coming spring with his clam oreganada recipe because he is a master chef. I got you, Wood. You ain't getting out of this one.
Thanks, Tommy P. I appreciate that, my brother.
You take care. Best of the boys and the family. We'll see you, man.
Likewise. Happy Thanksgiving.
You too. This is a very, very cool guy. We try to get him on with a clam recipe with the boys, the Tuna Club. This guy is going crazy. But roll with the troll. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
Saturday morning in the locker room with Billy Schwein, producer Nick Earnshaw, and former Kansas City Chiefs wide receiver Dave Klemek. Join me in the studio. We'll recap the Eagles-Bears Black Friday action. We'll get the keys to the game when Fox 29 News sports anchor Scott Grayson, brought to you by Blitz's Market of Ocean City. Hour two, we have our high school athletes in the spotlight with Fran McLaughlin, brought to you by the Philly Pretzel Factory of Egg Harbor Township. Flyers talk and more. It's the locker with Billy Schwein, Saturday morning from 10 a.m. to noon on 97.3 ESPN.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. on 97.3 ESPN.
Hey, again, I hope everyone's Thanksgiving holiday, it was great. It's continuing into this week, and I'll tell you, they put out a lot of pheasants, a lot of quail, so good going on that. Striper fishing, as I said earlier in the program, is off the charts. Tog fishing, they're really chewing. The trout fishing, yes, I'm making my runs all over the place, has been nothing short of spectacular. Well, check this out. DEP Fish and Wildlife's R3 program is putting on a winter trout fishing seminar. No kidding. December 6th at 9:30 a.m. Where? The Ocean County Library, the Jackson Branch, 2 Jackson Drive in Jackson, Ocean County. Finally, we're getting some recognition down here. We have some tremendous trout fishing opportunities in the spring and in the autumn. Now, we just had this past week, we had the winter, a.k.a. November stocking. On Tuesday in the Rack and Fin area, Haddon Lake, Rowan's Pond, Vineland Park Pond, Birch Grove Park Pond, right down the road here, and also Pond de Lodge Pond down there in the Villas and the Cape. What a beautiful were stocked. Well, these were still waters. Back in October, you had the Matitecock, the Manasquan, the Toms, and the Toms TCA, the Morris River, all stocked. And these fish will hold over through the winter prime time to go trout fishing, one, for the simple reason there's not that many people out there, be it on moving or still waters, and the opportunities are there. And don't forget, these fish are the two-year-olds, and you still have some breeders left over from the October stock. And go to njfishandwildlife.com for a full roster of the waters. But to talk about this, I'm so excited about this because I know the gentleman who is going to be conducting the seminar, Chris Lido, absolutely incredible, incredible sportsman, gentleman, and trout fisherman knowledge off the charts. Joining us right now is Alana.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Hold on. Okay, Alana, thanks. Yeah, I had a little problem there with the mic. Alana, your title with the R3 program, please, and explain R3 briefly. Go.
Sure. So I am a program specialist with Fish and Wildlife, and I am the R3 fishing coordinator. So R3 stands for recruitment, retention, and reactivation. And in a nutshell, that just means how do we bring people into the sport? How do we keep them in the sport? And how do we bring back folks who maybe used to fish and maybe life got in the way or for whatever reason they stopped? Fish and Wildlife has really always offered beginner fishing programs, primarily at our hatcheries in the north.
Right.
So my role is to kind of spread that across the state. So I've established a lot of locations, primarily in Central and South Jersey, where I offer beginners programs April through October. That retention part is really supporting current anglers. So that's where this winter trout fishing seminar falls more in the retention and reactivation. Mm-hmm. But it is open to beginners as well. It is totally free. And it's just a way, you know, I've encountered so many people who have bought a fishing license for 3 or more years, and they still consider themselves a beginner. And there's a lot of research that goes into people need support. If they didn't grow up fishing, or the same is true for hunting, and they don't have family members that just kind of raise them with that knowledge, they need some support to be able to really adopt it and stick with it.
Go ahead. Finish, please.
That's just the idea. We're kind of trying to expand what we offer as far as programs and also offer it in more locations. We felt like Ocean County, Jackson Branch, the library was happy to have us, and it's a nice central location, and there's a lot of fall and winter trout stocking locations in that area. So a way to kind of reach more of the New Jersey population.
And listen, in the southern tier counties, Cumberland, whatever, you're within an hour drive from most of the Jackson locus. So it's a great opportunity there. And the person conducting it, Chris Lido, phenomenal trout fisherman. I had the honor. I've known Chris for decades. A former editor of the Fisherman Magazine, for example, the Mid-Atlantic Delaware Bay or New Jersey Delaware Bay issue. Excuse me. And I've seen him on the water, seen him in the winter, seen him in the summer, seen him in the spring, seen him in the autumn. He is very, very knowledgeable. You couldn't have picked a better person.
Yeah, so I've actually known Chris for over a decade myself.
Yeah.
I worked with him previously. He's a conservation educator. He has a ton of knowledge, outdoor knowledge, fishing knowledge. He's enthusiastic and really looking forward to the opportunity to partner with him on this. We do try to bring our biologist in to do some of our seminars, but they're busy too. This is just another opportunity. And like you said, yeah, Chris is very knowledgeable, enthusiastic. He really knows this stuff. And he's going to give a presentation on trout biology, strategies for targeting trout, different lures and gear recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's going to touch on ice fishing a little bit because we might have an ice season this year.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I love that. I'm going to send you some photos. I love it. Written articles on it. The Jersey, when you do have it. Now, we had ice down here in South Jersey periodically over the past decade and a half, maybe three or four times. And where it's legal, listeners, you have to make sure where it's legal, county parks, you may not be. Just it's incumbent upon you to contact whoever owns the water body to see that. But it's just fantastic. And again, a lot of my things, not that many people do it.
Yeah, well, you know, I think part of it is our society's kind of shifted and not everybody grows up doing these things. And so if you don't have people in your family or you don't have an immediate friend that can take you and show you, it can be a little bit intimidating. So we actually did also just offer an ice fishing seminar earlier in November,
yeah.
And it was not an ice fishing session, but to give people the safety and the knowledge on safety knowledge and gear knowledge on what to do and how to be prepared.
Well, from some research I've done, and a shout out to long retired I&E, just a cool guy, Jim Shosh. I don't know where Jimmy ended. He's in North Carolina, so he's loving life. There are, it's sent pretty constant, go dips a little bit, comes up a little bit, about 12,000 trout stamp buying anglers in the southern tier counties. I consider that basically from, I call it below the belt. You have that Trenton to Point Pleasant, you know, demarcation there and below that.
Mm-hmm.
And there are plenty of trout stocked waters in the spring. You have a good number during fall and again in the winter. So, listen, the opportunities are there. Now, I understand this is a free seminar, correct?
It is free. And we do have a few seats available. So, unfortunately, this is not posted online anywhere. But if anybody was interested in attending, like I said, there's about 15 seats available. They could reach out to me either by email, which is njfishingr3@dep.nj.gov, or they can call or text me at 609-462-0743.
Now, the deadline is, if there are seats available, the deadline is December 4th, December 4th, I understand, correct?
December 4th, yeah.
Probably going to be filled by then.
It probably will be, but if I still had seats available and somebody walked in, I would not turn them away. But we do have a capacity. We can't go over at the library.
Sure. Now, listen, the seminar begins at 9:30 a.m. and is approximately an hour and a half to 2 hours long. You must have your conservation CID number to apply. Okay, that's
yes, that's the
mandatory
number on your New Jersey fishing license. And even if you're under 16 or over 70, you are able to create a conservation ID number for free. Or if you're over 70 or already in our system, you would already have one.
Now, Lon, it's my understanding there will not be a fishing component, a.k.a. there won't be any on-the-water stuff, correct?
That's right. We're not fishing for this one. This is purely informational. But Chris has a great presentation for us.
Yeah.
And some gear recommendations, some show and tell.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be really a great presentation.
Listen, it's a win-win all around. You're interested. Now, I know I see the same people here and there, and some have brought, some other people with them, you know, bought a license and a trout stamp. On the trout stock waters I fished through South, I mean, Swedesboro Lake, South Vineland Park Pond, Ponder Lodge Pond, Birch Grove Park right here, the Morris River down there, and the Salem-Cumberland border. So there is interest, and hopefully this, and again, listen, even though it's Southern Ocean County, Jackson, it's a short drive, reasonably short drive, and you can really, really get some knowledge here. I go with them, I have my power bed, I catch one or two, not that many, and this is a perfect opportunity to say, whoa, there's really some things here I can learn and, you know, maybe get that limit now and then.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what we hope for. And like you said, there's a lot of trout stamp buyers. This is a pretty short drive from actually anywhere in the state. And not only do we have a fantastic spring stocking program, as you mentioned earlier, we have a great fall and winter stocking program that put two-year-old trout averaging 14 to 16 inches. Our fall stocking program had 20,000 two-year-old trout spread throughout the state. And the winter trout stocking, there are some north region body, water bodies, but it really primarily focuses a lot on our southern water bodies and had almost 5,000 two-year-old rainbow trout averaging 14 to 18 inches. So, and these fish are likely to hold over with these colder temperatures. They're going to be there.
Absolutely.
They're going to be there to be caught.
Well, just full disclosure, South Violent Park Pond, I love Shaw's Mill, Birch Grove, right down there, but Ponder Lodge has a place in my heart. I remember not that long retired, but Lisa Barner, former, before she became assistant director, former freshwater fisheries boss. She came down on the stocking truck with Jimmy Hardeby, who is now, I guess, crew manager, Northern Region Lands Management, to Ponder Lodge Pond in November. And Lisa was great. I worked with her way back when she first started, and I was about to leave. She looked at me, she turned to me, she said, "Tom P., I never realized there was a water body like this in South Jersey." Now we're talking way south. We're talking the Villis. You can smell the salt air from Delaware Bay, but it's a deep spring-fed pond. It's absolutely gorgeous. And we catch trout out of there, God, into July. And then they will. Oh, it's absolutely. I call it the mini version of Cape May County version of Round Valley Reservoir. Honest to God. Or Merrill Creek. It's that nice. We have plenty of opportunities down here, listeners. Again, Alana, for more information, give a contact, please.
Yeah. So for more information, my email, they can reach me at njfishingr3@dep.nj.gov. Or folks can reach out on my cell phone, a call or a text. 609-462-0743.
Alana Newmark, thank you very much. Listen, one more time, full disclosure. God, I'm actually opening up here, being honest. Oh, my God. Met Alana, I don't want to go into how many years ago, and this diminutive young lady can fling a net full of trout like no one's business, man. Like, whoa, is that girl taking Taekwondo, the gym powerlifting, or what? You were flailing those fish out there, girl.
Oh, that had to be, what, 15 years ago, Tom?
Yeah. And I said, I remember the guy, the gentleman handed you the net. And I said, no way she's going to. She probably is. And I had my camera, because I was doing right. I was, you know, and, what? And out they went. After that, I said, okay, it's good. So, and then ran into her and her husband and kids of all places, a little tackle shop on LBI. Do you remember that?
I do remember that, and my daughter remembers you sharing her grapes with her.
Okay, Alana, great program. Listeners, check it out. It's going to be a trout fishing seminar December 6th at 9:30 a.m. the Ocean County Library, Jackson Branch, 2 Jackson Drive in Jackson Township. Discover the great trout fishing opportunities, Central and South Jersey. North, we know. Down here, it's just still an undiscovered secret. You take care. See you later, man.
Thank you, Tom. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
Alana Newmark. She's unbelievable. She took this net. I think they had to weigh 25 pounds. Wham! Out it went. I said, whoa. The guy says, here, Tom P. Ryan. I said, man, I'm not doing that. That's work, and that word is not in my lexicon. I'll be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
It's Philadelphia Flyers Hockey ESPN Radio. It's a Big Ten rivalry game with playoff implications. 6th-ranked Oregon faces the Washington Huskies in Seattle. The Ducks are looking to lock in a playoff berth. While this will be Washington's biggest win of the season, 6th-ranked Oregon at Washington.
It's College Football Saturday on 97.3 ESPN. Coverage begins at 3 p.m.
College Football Saturday, brought to you by First Bank of Sea Isle City.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. on 97.3 ESPN.
Yeah, back for our final segment, Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Thanksgiving weekend, November 29th and 30th. Hey, you're tuned in 7 to 8 a.m., 97.3 ESPN FM, 50,000 mega. Far reach, you out to the Rack and Fin Radio message. How cool is that? Streaming live, 97.3ESPN.com. Download the 97.3 app or go to Apple, Spotify, or YouTube for the podcast. Now, earlier in the program, we had Jody Powers talking the firearm deer prospectus. Hey, running the same week. Too excited. Man, it is segment B of New Jersey's fantastic, great black bear season. Now, during segment A, 368 Bruins were harvested. Let's see, that's a 15.7% in this tagging number of tagged bears as in a management figure. That came out to a total of 26. Zone 2 was the highest with 111. Zone 3, 103. Zone 1, 91. Zone 4, 62. And Zone 5 is 1. Join us on the line for perspectives of the season. Explain to management a little more is Jim Oxley, DEP Fish and Wildlife Bureau of Wildlife Management Chief. He's becoming a fairly regular guest on Rack and Fin Radio. And above all, he is a cool guy. Sorry, Oxley. I get too excited. How you doing, man?
Good morning, Tom. Thanks it's for having me again.
Yogi and Boo Boo Tom, baby. So, Jim, it's, these numbers are they're pretty encouraging when it came out to 368. Is there an actual, besides, you know, the percentage on the tag bears, is there a preferred target day? Like, we'd like to harvest 500, 450. Is there a bottom line or top line number? What's the dealio?
Well, statistically, you really can't put a hard number on it because it all goes by those tagged bears.
Mm-hmm.
For example, on Wednesday of segment A, even though we harvested 61 bears, we had zero of them tagged.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of like an anomaly, but it can happen. So you really can't, you know, put a hard number on it. But, you know, historically speaking, if you look at the percentages, yeah, we're looking for probably another 105 bears. You know, to be right around that 475, 480 mark would probably get us at our target.
Now, if the target is not reached, I understand there is an extension then, correct?
Correct. So if we do not surpass the 20% of the harvest rate, which is those captured bears, then we'll get a four-day extension that second week after segment A.
Okay, now, and there was a thing there. I remember if it hit 30%, the hunt could be shut down, correct?
Yeah. So if at any point in time, even if that had happened during segment A, if we had gone above that 30%, then the harvest stops immediately.
Yeah, listen, weather is the big predictor here. It's, again, we have a cold front that came in, blowing through. As I explained to him, the sleet, freezing rain, snow, that pretty much brings them to the ground. But we've seen them when the temperature was in the, you know, the mid-20s. So they're still running around, especially with this incredible acorn crop and the northern tier counties. You're just like, it's like you're walking on ball bearings in the woods. So we saw one the other day coming back from PA. And listen, as Jody said with the deer, these bears are big, fat, and healthy, sort of like me.
Yeah, if there's still enough food around and you know, weather cooperates, they'll still be foraging for sure. Last week I made a presentation at the annual Farm Bureau conference, and I mentioned you. I dropped your name talking about that one bear only in Zone 5. I was telling everybody that, man, in the Sourlands, they're out there.
Oof,
and there's not much pressure. So if anybody wants to get out there at that northern Mercer, Hunterdon County area, there's some big bears out there.
Okay. Well, Jim, one thing I noticed, too, this year and then last year to a degree, especially noticeable this year during the segment, the lack of the freak show, as I call it, the anti-hunt protest. Sorry, that's, you know, you should.
Sure.
I never saw hair so many different colors before. But, yeah, that seemed to have dropped off. Was it the, you know, I guess a lawsuit, the court rulings, the Fish and Game Council has final word? In your opinion, why is this sort of, it's a good thing. They just stopped. I mean, are they marshaling their forces, you think? I don't know.
Sure. Well, I think, like you mentioned, I think a couple of the lawsuits were found in our favor. They still do protest, but what they found out is, you know, historically they would protest at one of the check-in stations. Well, there you're kind of preaching to the choir. So what they've done lately, and I think this past segment A, they protested in Tom's River. Busy street corners. I know in the past they've been in Paramus.
Westfield up there in Union County?
Yeah, yeah.
Where there's bears running back and forth in the Watchung Reservation in the backyard. I don't want to say anything.
Right. So they still get out there, and they, you know, and it's their right. That's fine. We understand. But as far as the days of them showing up at the check stations, you know, few and far between. And, you know, our goal as an agency is just, it's just another opening day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like deer season. It's just like any other season. So I've had conversations with some people in the past, and you mentioned that, you know, we'll harvest close to 40,000 deer and less than 500 bear, but nobody's out protesting the first, you know, opening day of deer season. So to me, it just, you know, they're right, but just doesn't make sense, you know.
Yeah, this is true. Listen, regarding the check stations, all that information, page 47 of the digest. Now, a bear permits $2, and listen, you at the bear hunting again, as you mentioned, Jim. How many states and all different countries do people come here to hunt our Bruins? I say ours. I'm Jersey. Hunt our Bruins. I get really proud about this. Go ahead.
So we're up to 37 now. So last year it was 35 different states as far away as Alaska, and this year we're up to 37 different states.
Jim, and I stopped at a check station, and the gentleman there, I said, he had this weird looking hat. I said, man, he looks like he's from the Sound of Music or something. He had a deer and he had a bear.
Yeah, that's a good chance of that. Bag.
And he had a piece of balsam or pine, whatever, in the deer's mouth and in the bear's mouth. And he had a sort of a German or Dutch accent, whatever. And he was at, it was a jumbo land. He was checking in the deer and he was bringing a bear over to Pequot. And he said, "Do you realize how great the hunting is here and so inexpensive?" Mm-hmm. Where he came, where emigrated from Europe, obviously. Right. You know, it's crazy the price. And he says, "This is amazing what you have here in New Jersey." I sort of thought, yeah, man, it's about time you found out.
And I think even within the state, you know, whenever we discuss increase in stamp fee or increase in the license fee, people always say how expensive it is to hunt here in New Jersey. And I always say, well, just compare the amount of hunting days you get here and the harvest. Go try and do that in any other state and tell me, come back and tell me how much it is there. So it really is a bargain here in New Jersey still. And if people just did some comparative shopping, they realize that.
Joining us online is Jim Oxley, DEP's Fish and Wildlife Bureau Chief, Bureau of Wildlife Management. So, Jim, listen, I'll let you go. But so your prospectus looks good, barring the weather, listeners, for December 8th through 13th, Segment B of the Bears. I'm predicting a 700-pound. I'm predicting a 700-pounder, man.
Yeah, so we did get, you had mentioned before about some of the bigger bears. So right now, 598 was the biggest one we had in Segment A. So let's see if we can top that in Segment B.
I'm telling you, mark it here. Top P said it. We're in the studio early. 700 pounds coming down.
That'd be nice. Yeah.
Jim, you take care. You have a great Thanksgiving weekend. I'll tell you, ate and drank like I was on death row. It was amazing. Okay, Jim.
You as well, Tom.
You take care. See you, bro.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
He's a great guy. Okay, that'll do it for this week on Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. God bless America. God bless our troops. God bless our first responders and law enforcement. Get out there and enjoy. See you next week.